And welcome back to Cool Science Radio. John Wells here with Lynn Ware Peak. Well, now mosquitoes are responsible for more than 725,000 deaths annually, which makes them the deadliest creatures on the planet. And while we're in more northern latitudes and don't directly feel the fatal effects of mosquitoes and view them more as a damper to our camping experience, with a warming climate, mosquitoes will begin to affect us more and more here in Utah. However, scientists are scrambling to fight back against the mosquito, and our next guest, Dan Strickman, joins us to tell us why. Dan writes in this month's Scientific American. His article is called Buzzkill, and he talks about the advances that may keep us from the deadly mosquito. Welcome to Cool Science Radio, Dan.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Before we start, I'm fascinated. You're a medical entomologist, and you head up vector control operations at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Can you tell us what vector control operations are?
Well, our main focus is on malaria in developing countries, and our goal is to completely eliminate that disease from the planet. So a big part of that is trying to stop the transmission that's caused by the mosquitoes to people. So by using a number of different methods, we're able to bring that level of transmission way, way down compared to the natural level.
Yeah, and there's a lot of really good detail in your article, and we want to get to some of that. But from 40,000 feet, you also state that that bugs are responsible for killing more people than all the wars in history combined. That really sort of frames the argument about how important this is, doesn't it?
Yeah. Insects and other arthropods are responsible for about 17% of all infectious disease. So they're very important.
So, you know, you talk about how 3,500 species of mosquito are found worldwide, but only a small fraction of those cause the illness and suffering that humans experience. And I think the one that's probably forefront, I mean, other than the mosquito that causes or that transmits malaria, the Zika virus. And could you talk a little bit, Dan, about how the Zika virus is being found in more northern latitudes?
Well, Zika virus experience has been quite surprising to professionals and, of course, the population at large. And that's because it had never been known as a very important virus before the current outbreak. Something changed with the virus and also the distribution of that main mosquito that transmits it to cause this really very large outbreak. And then, unfortunately, the world found out that the effects of infection are really quite serious.
Right. And so the effects of the infection have always been serious in pregnant women. Is that right? But if you're not a pregnant woman and you get the Zika virus, sometimes it just makes you very sick and you get over it, right?
Yeah, eventually you get over it. But one of the qualities of this virus is that it persists longer than similar viruses in both the bodies of both men and women. So there can be venereal transmission long after there's any sign of infection from the virus. And as far as always having affected pregnant women, really nobody knew that effect from the virus before about 2015.
And also in your article, just to frame who the culprits really are, there are some major players in spreading the disease as far as mosquitoes, but there are some mosquitoes that don't. And then looking at the genders, it's only females that actually bite people. Can you talk about what happens when a female that is infected bites somebody and how all this works?
So the mosquito has to bite twice in order to transmit a virus or a malaria pathogen. So it has to bite once to pick up the virus or parasite, and then that virus or parasite has to grow in the mosquito over a period of usually a week to 10 or 15 days, depending on the temperature. And during that time, there's a cycle for that virus or parasite, and it gets into the salivary glands, believe it or not, of the mosquito, and so that when the mosquito bites, it injects saliva as it feeds on your blood. It needs to do that so that it can feed on blood, and then the pathogen is carried into your body by the saliva.
As we learn more about the impact of the mosquito, can we go back in history and start looking at how certain groups of people kind of disappeared and sort of think that, you know, maybe they had a mosquito problem as well?
Well, I think the best example of that is probably the Europeans' experience in Africa and also in Southeast Asia. Malaria, in particular, was a good reason for slowing up the colonization of those areas by Europeans because they were so heavily affected. You know, we also have the example of when the French tried to build the Panama Canal in the late 1800s, they simply couldn't do it because there was so much yellow fever.
Right.
And there are people that have varying ideas of why the Roman Empire sort of disappeared off the map. Is it possible that mosquitoes were involved there?
Well, malaria was a problem on the Italian peninsula up until the 1920s. So it was a severe problem in parts of the Italian peninsula, and no doubt it dragged down the Roman economy. But possibly more important were outbreaks of plague, which is transmitted by fleas and carried by rats. That, of course, we're all familiar with the Black Plague, and the Romans had some outbreaks of that too, probably, and that has a huge effect on a population that's not protected.
Right. You know, it's just so interesting how the approach to eradicating, controlling, or lessening the harmful effects of mosquitoes is sort of tackled worldwide. And it's everything from, you know, what we do here in Utah, which is, you know, insecticides, and there's research around improving those insecticides, to all the way to things like gene manipulation to render mosquitoes sterile, which I find so interesting. And you say in your article that a lot of this technology, at least the sort of the design for it, has been around for a while, but it's just not been brought to fruition. Can you talk about genetic manipulation and where we are on possibly eradicating the mosquito, you know, once and for all?
Sure. Well, one thing I would like to mention that, especially in Salt Lake City, Utah, you have one of the best mosquito abatement programs in the country, and they don't just use insecticides. They modify the environment so there's better drainage and there are less places that produce mosquitoes. That's really very important. It's very important in the developing world, too, but it's expensive to do, and it takes a lot of organization, and that's why we turn to other methods like genetic manipulation that can be applied over a large area and hopefully take hold and solve a problem. As far as eradicating mosquitoes, that's simply no one's trying to do that. As you mentioned, there are 3,500 species and only a few are important. So
right.
the genetic modification techniques target those most important species. There's an example of using a genetically modified mosquito very successfully to control that the species that transmits Zika virus. And that's actually being done in several cities in Brazil right now on a commercial basis. So there's been a lot of progress on that. Gene drive is the latest in genetic manipulation of mosquitoes to control them. And that's a little different in that it's transmitted to the next generation 100%. So that you don't have to use as many mosquitoes, genetically modified mosquitoes, and in theory it would spread over a large area on its own.
Wow, that's fascinating. So you say in Brazil it's being used commercially. What sort of success are they having, and how widespread is it?
They're having very good success. They report rates of control up to 96%, which, of course, is enough to stop transmission. But it costs money to do that, and the total area that's where that's applied is fairly small in relation to all the places in Brazil or worldwide that could use that approach. But, you know, the company that's doing it is in there kicking and trying to expand their coverage and bring their prices down and do this on a commercial basis.
Well, mosquito birth control is certainly high-tech, CRISPR technology, all those sorts of things. But let's talk about low-tech just for a while, because there's some very effective things that you write about in your article, and one of those is the Eve tube. Can you talk about that, please?
Yeah, it is very simple. It's simply a tube that you place between the roof and the top of the wall of a home in tropical Africa. And then inside of that, you put a piece of screen that has an insecticide coated on it. And it's coated on it in a way that the mosquito gets a really large dose of insecticide just from touching it. So it happens that in Africa, the most important species of mosquitoes that transmit malaria like to go to that place just below the roof in order to enter the house. And most houses, that area is open. So when you install Eve tubes, you seal that up, except for these tubes with the screens, and the whole house becomes kind of a attractive trap for mosquitoes as they come to seek hosts. But all those mosquitoes are killed as they try to enter, and you get not just protection of the people inside the home, but a lowering of the population of mosquitoes that can transmit and a lowering of the amount of malaria in the whole community.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with Dan Strickman. He's a medical entomologist. He heads up vector control operations at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And his article appears in the July 2018 Scientific American. Do you know anything about, I read something a couple of years about people themselves, if they can turn off what's attractive to them and has something to do with their bacteria that they have in the way that it may attract mosquitoes. Do you know anything about that as an effective tool for helping to stop the spread of these diseases?
Boy, you know, it's a very interesting subject, the way that different people are attracted to mosquitoes at different levels and why that's the case. So at this point, we actually know quite a lot about why people are attracted to mosquitoes. And it turns out it's a very complicated picture with dozens of chemicals, the ratios of those chemicals, as well as skin temperature having a lot to do with that. So bacteria are involved in producing some of those chemicals on our skin. No one has ever come up with a way that's really effective to manipulate the bacterial flora of your skin to affect mosquitoes, but there's certainly a mechanism there. What they have done is produced a series of really effective chemicals that do various things to stop the ability of the mosquito to sense those chemicals that stimulate them to bite.
And that, I just want to follow up on a question regarding those chemicals. You know, we stopped spraying, DDT a while ago, I believe, in this country. And yet we do have chemicals that are, you know, pretty strong, and we don't want to be spreading them around too wildly because the chemicals themselves are dangerous. Where are we on that front in terms of safe chemicals to eradicate mosquitoes?
Well, in the United States, we have really a premier agency that regulates that, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. So before any insecticide is registered by the EPA, it's evaluated for its toxicity and also its environmental effects. But that's always in relation to the exposure that's likely to happen. So if you have a repellent that you're putting directly on your skin, obviously, the safety standard is extremely high. If it's something that's sprayed inside a house, the safety standard is also very high. On the other hand, if it's outdoors, applied, say, on crops away from people, then a much higher level of toxicity can be tolerated. The situation is a lot different than 1972 when DDT was banned in the United States. It's been a long time since we used DDT. And DDT was partly responsible for trying to strengthen these regulatory practices so that we wouldn't have those environmental effects from new pesticides.
Mm. Dan Strickman, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Again, Dan is a medical entomologist who heads up vector control operations at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. It's a fascinating article, and it's quite a subject, isn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting to me.
Yeah. Thank you very much for joining us, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
Take care. Bye.